There are, I think, three outstanding difficulties that we have when it comes to reading the Bible. Actually, there are probably more, but three which come to mind. The first, perhaps the greatest of them, is resistance. By resistance, I mean that often we know exactly what the scriptures are telling us about the will and the way of God, but we don't want to hear because the call they place on us is hard to accept. Love your enemies, while sometimes perhaps tricky in the details, is actually a fairly straightforward command to understand. We know what it means, but it's easy to resist. Holding all that we possess lightly, willing to give our possessions for the benefit of others and the reign of God, it's easy to resist. And resistance can also take an unconscious form. We resist seeing and hearing what we don't expect to see and hear, what doesn't fit with our current understanding, our cultural and subcultural worldview. So everybody knows we hear that the Bible is against gender transition or fluidity until you start looking and see that you only find such opposition if you're already expecting to see it. Confirmation bias, other cognitive biases cause us to resist seeing and hearing what we don't expect. But I'm actually not talking about resistance today. For more on that, see many of my other sermons or my master's thesis. The other two difficulties that I think we face are unfamiliarity and familiarity. Unfamiliarity we talk about quite often. The biblical texts were written in a language and a culture and a context that's unfamiliar to us. So idioms and cultural norms and social expectations, all alien. And familiarity, or over-familiarity perhaps, with the text itself, that we've heard it so often that we don't hear it at all. We glaze over. We're too polite to fall asleep, mostly, but we can easily switch off. And one powerful counter to familiarity is to come at a text with a completely different set of questions to the ones you would normally ask. And that's actually what we're going to be doing in the next 4 weeks, in this season of creation. This year themed, Listen to the Voice of Creation. Because there are lots of biblical texts that you might choose if you wanted to talk about creation. If I was constructing such a series, I'd pick those texts which seem to speak specifically to the question. But the season of creation each year challenges us to do something different, to take the lectionary texts, the standard texts that are being used by churches across the world, and ask a different question of them. Ask of them, can we hear the voice of creation in these words, to approach them differently, to hope to hear something new. So we come today to two of the lectionary readings. First of all, to the words of the prophet Jeremiah. And he at least mentions the land. So at least there's an in there for the preacher who is taking on the theme of the season of creation. Jeremiah sees a vision of the land rendered desolate. In verse 23, I looked on the earth, and lo, it was waste and void. And I looked to the heavens, and they had no light. It reads like a stark reversal of the story of creation. Right back at the beginning, in Genesis 1, verse 2, before God speaks creation into being and declares that it is good, we read that the earth was a formless void and darkness covered the face of the earth. Words that Jeremiah seems to be replaying in his vision. The fall of the nation, the exile of the people of God from their homeland, that was what Jeremiah was talking about, what he was foretelling, and then what he lived through. And he painted it as a story of uncreation, of the reversal of the work God had done in Genesis. And here I think we run into unfamiliarity. For though each one of us would no doubt be devastated if we were forced from our homeland into exile, as so many are indeed today, and so many more will be as conflict continues and as ocean levels continue to rise, we, most of us Western types, don't have that deep sense of connection with the land that's characteristic of many cultures. We don't feel that sense that the loss of land is loss of identity, in the way that the people of Israel did, in the way that Indigenous Australians or Pacifica people do today. And Jeremiah plays that sense of connection, as it were, in reverse. His symbol of exile, when he talks about the exile, he doesn't describe the people losing the land. He talks about the land losing its meaning as it loses the people. In Jeremiah's vision of this desolation, the land isn't the villain, it's the victim. The land is desolated because the people have been taken. Indeed, the land is desolated because of the sin of the people. They are skilled in doing evil, he writes, but don't know how to do good. In the words of the prophet, the land cries out an accusation against the people of Israel. You have done this. Your greed, your loss of understanding of the sovereignty of God, your forgetting of whose people you are. I wonder if we can find that parallel, if we can hear the voice of creation as it cries out against our generations today, for the destruction of habitat, for the pollution of land, air, and water, the coral bleaching, the rising sea levels, the increased severity and frequency of extreme weather events, all of which are just harbingers of potentially catastrophic climate change. Can we hear the voice of creation saying to us, You have done this. You are doing this. And then we turn to the gospel reading. We turn to two of Jesus' parables of the lost and found. The best known of them, surely, is that of the wandering sheep, the one of the 100 who isn't where it's supposed to be. A common theme, of course, exploring this parable is the question of whether or not the shepherd acts wisely. Which of you, Jesus asks, would not leave the 99 to go looking for the one? And the answer is actually most of us would not leave the 99 to go looking for the one. Most of us would not put the 99 at risk for the sake of the one. And so we read this parable rightly as this glorious declaration of the foolishness of the risky love of God that reaches out for the lost. But that tension, which I'm absolutely certain was intentional in Jesus' word, indeed, it's the whole power of the parable, that tension depends upon the idea that we value what we have lost. It's often said you don't know what you've got till it's gone. But if you just lose a little bit, just one of the 100 sheep, it's easy not to notice, or to notice but not care. If you lose one, you might just accept that as the cost of doing business. And then you lose one of your 99. And then you lose one of your 98. And it seems that so much of our difficulty as humanity in taking environmental degradation seriously is that it happens little bit by little bit, so slowly. It's common for us to blame political short-sightedness brought on by the election cycle, mostly. But in truth, it's a much broader human condition. We don't notice, we don't take seriously change, which happens slowly. We don't notice, we don't take seriously each 50th of a degree. What's the 50th of a degree Celsius in increased temperature? The current annual rate of increase. It's so small. It's one sheep. We've got 99. So while this parable points first and most powerfully towards God's care for the lost individual, perhaps in it we might also hear the voice of creation speaking a different message. For if you don't care for the first lost sheep, why will you care for the second or the third? And before you know it, the losses, insignificant on their own, add up to devastation. Does one more extinct species really matter? One more centimeter of ocean rise? Doesn't seem like it. But then you find yourself past a tipping point, heading towards collapse. You've probably heard the quote from Hemingway's The Sun Also Rises. How did you go bankrupt? Bill asked. Two ways, Mike said. Gradually, then suddenly. How do ecosystems collapse? How do ice shelves break off? Gradually, then suddenly. The theme of Seasons of Creation this year is listen to the voice of creation. Listen, an active verb. For creation doesn't speak in the way that we are used to hearing. To listen requires a deliberate choice. It requires us to adopt an attitude of wanting to hear, even wanting to hear what is uncomfortable to hear. Listen. Listen to what those who have dedicated their lives to understanding creation tell us that they are hearing. Listen to those whose cultures are more deeply connected to the land, to what they are hearing. And listen to the voice of the prophet, laying responsibility for the desolation of creation at the feet of humanity. Greed, selfishness, short-sightedness. And listen to the wisdom of Jesus's Good Shepherd, who understands that it is by watching for and caring for the one, it is by worrying about the small losses that we avoid Mike's gradual, then sudden bankruptcy. Listen to the voice of creation. Amen.